Hey, we all like to go out and eat, maybe have a cocktail or two. We don't really know what goes on behind the kitchen doors. That's what this show's all about. But the one man who spent most of his life behind those doors, the great Chef Pascal, is here to take us behind the kitchen doors with... You got a really cool guest today here again.
Thank you. Hopefully this is...
The which one?
This is less than half of my life, you know.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you still got plenty.
Well, you started
more to
when you
go.
Were probably six or what was the first? Well, how old were you when you first went behind the kitchen door? How old were you, for professionally, not just?
Professionally.
18, 16?
15.
Wow. 15.
My first job in the kitchen. Yeah.
What did you do?
Cook.
But you didn't just that's amazing, because many times you have to start off cleaning dishes or doing
I was at a cashier at Burger King.
Good for you. My mother, who was a
but we got into it, so we got to explain it.
My mother, who was a fantastic home cook and entertaining a lot, and she didn't want me to spend my school holidays or school vacation at home, she said, I'm going to get you a job for the summer. And she knew I loved to cook, and then because she taught me when I was 14 how to make a mayonnaise from scratch. So that was my first experience.
That was your calling card.
That's amazing.
Yes.
All right, well, now that we know.
So I start cooking in the kitchen right away for 2 months every summer. And since there, I'm still cooking.
All right, so now introduce your guest.
Yes.
She's got an amazing story and some amazingly cool places she runs here in Orange County.
I'm so amazed with my friend. And can we call you chef, entrepreneur, or restaurateur?
What's the correct title?
I'm a restaurateur. I'm not a chef. Okay. I wish I was a chef.
But... There's a few things that you've been cooking, and we're going to talk from a success story, start from a mini donut to an empire restaurant. How do you get there? So, chef, entrepreneur, Leslie Nguyen.
He doesn't know how to say Vietnamese last name, sir.
Leslie Nguyen.
Thank you.
That I admire is. Extremely, and I'm very curious to maybe she's going to share.
Well, tell us a couple of concepts, too. Let's introduce those before you launch them in here.
So I know you. I first met you because somebody told me, we need some little donuts for an event. And, you need to make it to meet this lady, and she make a it's called
Miss Mini Donuts.
A catering service specializing in gourmet mini donuts.
But I have to say, the donuts were really mini, but with a good thing, because you eat more than one.
Yeah.
But and they all were decorated. Because you're also an artist and a food designer.
Yeah.
Because you can decorate it for any theme. You pick your theme, for the season. It could be for Mother's Day, could be for birthday, in holiday time, you always...
I can even add
theme.
Your logo or your face on there.
Yes. Are you still doing that?
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. And so...
That's just one thing. I'm looking at a resume here.
And yes, Paul, I know.
My goodness. Well, I want to jump into the big ones here.
No, but because I had to go pick up the donut at that in the back of the kitchen. I said, why in the back of the kitchen? I found out that it was not just a donut place. She also started developing restaurant concept.
Yeah, and it's so funny because recently someone has said, this is super shady. You have to pick up the donuts in a random spot.
No, actually, it's the back door of a kitchen. Yeah, you know?
Out the back door.
Yeah, out of the back door. And so...
Yeah, so I use the kitchen inside a boss cat. Yeah.
So kitchen doors is right there. It's a real kitchen door. Yeah. I have to knock in. And honestly. And then you develop this boss cat concept of restaurant. Yes. And you also have developed a bar concept. You know? Tell us a bit about your bar concepts.
The bar concepts? Yes. So we have Boss Cat, Kitchen and Libations, 10 Sushi and Cocktail Bar. And then we just opened Baba G's. That used to be Bibelos. Did you ever go to Bibelos?
Yes.
In Orange? So yes. We changed
it. That was there for a long time.
Yeah, 35 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the son of the previous owner is still a partner. And this is his vision of how he wanted Bibelos. More fast casual, QSR, quick service restaurant. Yes. We order at the counter. And he just wanted to simplify things, make it easier. Mm-hmm. And a little bit more manageable,
yeah.
Because if he was taking over the business, he didn't want to be overwhelmed with all the mundane, everyday things with the restaurant, right? Yeah, so he wanted to simplify things. So this was his vision of that.
So. Bibelos is a very symbolic name from the Mediterranean.
Yes, you know? In Lebanon. Yes, it's a city in Lebanon. Lebanon. Yeah, they're Lebanese.
And I know Bibelos also because there's a famous hotel in Saint-Tropez called the Bibelos.
That sounds fancy. Yeah. I want to go there.
Yeah. That's why when I saw the sign, I said, oh, I need to go try. And it's right across one of your Buscat restaurants
as well. Yeah, it's right across the street from
Buscat. In Orange, by the Orange Circle.
How many Buscats are there now?
So we have 4 Buscats. There's one in Irvine, Orange. We have one in Houston, Texas, and the Woodlands, Texas.
Yeah. You're not busy enough for North. Yeah. You have to go to Texas. You know? You don't go to Colorado, no, you go straight to Texas.
Yeah. Oh, Colorado was on the list, but...
So can I ask you 2 quick questions,
sure.
And I'll let the chef pick up here. How did you... I'm looking at your resume. It says, born in Louisiana and then raised here in Laguna Niguel. You worked as a hostess, a server, a cashier, a bartender... Dive bars, biker bars. How does that turn into creating restaurant concepts that succeed and grow?
All the things. It kind of happened, I don't want to say by accident, because nothing really happens by accident. I think I worked really hard for it. But I actually never intended to be a restaurant. I don't know if a lot of people know that. I came from a bar background. I bartended a lot of bars like you just listed. My very first bar I opened was called Daily Dose Sports Lounge in 2009 in Irvine. And when I developed Boss Cat, my partner and I, we just wanted a cool bar that had real food, because Daily Dose food kitchen was the size of this table. I had a convection oven, a little panini press. Like, it was not real food. We're cooking flatbreads and salads and try to get ahi poke anything.
You had to serve food so people drink a little more.
We were doing 10% food and 90% alcohol.
Right.
I also had that liquor license as well. But yeah, I wanted more food. I wanted to have a real kitchen. So when we were developing Boss Cat, we said, at that time I drank whiskey. I was obsessed with it. So I was like, I want a whiskey bar. I want real food. And that's how Boss Cat kind of came about. And then people started coming for their food, and they were complaining. They're like, it's loud in here at the bar. And I'm like, well, that's kind of what I intended to be.
Sure.
And so
was it like late night dining?
Yeah.
As well?
Oh, yeah. We had served food till midnight and had the bar open till 2. People started coming for the food, and then next thing you know, we became a restaurant. The next door we opened, we said, okay, we're getting a lot of bad Yelp reviews. A lot of people want an actual dining area. So I said, okay, let's build a dining room. So when we built Houston, our Houston location, which is our largest location, we built a large dining, private dining in the actual whiskey room, because people were also calling for the whiskey room in Newport. They're like, can we reserve the whiskey room? I'm like,
because you have a room with like an incredible, I don't know why I haven't been there, an incredible selection of whiskey. I love whiskey.
Oh, yeah, over 300 different whiskeys.
Wow.
But
that's
the room.
That called for a long night.
calls for more than one night.
But the room was literally the size, like half the size of this room.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can't reserve the whiskey room. It's not something you really reserve. So that's when we built the second store. We were like, okay, we got to build a dining room. We got to build an area where people can reserve the whiskey room because this is what people were wanting. And then next thing you know, we became a restaurant.
So what is, if you gave a, give me the pitch, if nobody's ever been to Boscat. I haven't been to Boscat. What is
I've
Boscat?
I've been, Paul.
So what is it? Tell us what it is.
I will tell you my impression.
Okay.
And then, but they are good, positive. When you go to a whiskey bar, and it looks like now, when you go to a bar, and the bartender asks you what type of whiskey you like, and it's become like a wine bar,
yeah,
yes,
talking about whiskey.
Yes.
And I didn't know that until I experienced it. And people have their idea of what they like. You know, they like it all on the woody side. They like it in more dry side and sweet side. Yeah. You know,
smoky.
So how do you train your staff and your bartender to have the response for that? If you have so much
knowledge.
Yeah, we actually have an intense training program. I call it my University of Boscat. And it goes, you know, we spend a week just on spirits alone, on top of the food.
Yeah.
And then throughout that, there's testing. And if you study and you pass certain tests, you get a pay bump, or you get there's incentives that you get for knowing your stuff. Mm-hmm. I actually want to create a program. It's funny you said that it's like a wine bar,
yeah,
because like, you know how wine bars have that Psalms. I wanted to kind of create something of that same experience where like you had a whiskey master that came to your table, so knew what you were ordering and would do the pairing,
yeah,
or do a table side
so
cocktail.
Sommelier.
But for a whiskey.
But, wow. Yeah. Do you have like a whiskey menu, so
yes,
like a wine menu.
We call it a Bible.
And also with a breakdown of, you know, the really the, give a little bit of the characters. You can separate the characters.
It's broken down by region, by like areas, like Kentucky, Ireland, Scotland. Like it's broken down by that, and it does have notes to them next to it. So we call it the Whiskey Bible.
So how do you call, like, per se, like, for wine, we have a sommelier, but a whiskey master?
I was thinking whiskey master, something fun like that, and have, like, a master certification.
What a job, you know?
Oh, yeah, and I have a couple of people on our team that I'm already priming up for it, and, like, okay.
I thought I knew somebody went through some sort of, like, whiskey sommelier program. I don't know what they called it, but we had to get tested. Like a sommelier has to be able to identify the stuff blind and taste it.
Probably not in our area, but in a region where they actually make whiskey, I'm
Scotland,
sure.
Scotland, Ireland, Japan.
They have to go to some distillery and do testing because whiskey is like wine. You know? It's good today when it's aging, and then tomorrow it changes. Once it's in a bottle, it's fine, you know, but don't keep it open too long. You know, so.
Better tomorrow. Yeah, well, because they more than wine, they age it like 20 years sometimes, 25 years. Or
And then this, I would say, whiskey master become a mixologist, and they know what whiskey to use for what cocktail you serve it with. You know, there's a little other additional pairing inside the glass, you know.
Yeah.
And would
have
to match the food to the whiskey?
Different
flights of whiskey for different.
That's how our food kind of came about, too, because, you know, originally my partner wanted really healthy food, really clean food. Something that's not what we have now. We do, but chef was like, no, you know, I want to make food that pairs well with whiskey. So, you know, he made a fantastic burger and a short rib dish, a shrimp and grits, a pork chop.
And I have to say, I had a couple of experiences in different locations of your Boscat. And you didn't want each place to be copycat.
No pun intended. Boscat copycat.
It's
no pun intended. Folks.
Is that supposed to be funny? So you you let the chef. Yes. You actually have great chef and sous chef in every kitchen, and you let them do specials.
Yes.
And they love to come out sometimes, see your guests. So it's not really just a bar ambiance. You really have a full-on service.
Yes.
And the chef are really proud when you ask them to come over and talk about their food. And I had some fantastic, you mentioned short ribs. Fantastic short ribs.
She lets them out of the kitchen? She lets them come and talk to the public?
Yes. You know, we actually have windows in the kitchen on purpose because we wanted the chefs to actually see the people's reaction when they ate. Because that's the beauty part of why we do what we do, right? Mm-hmm. You want to see the reaction and them enjoying the food.
They look happy, so yeah. I guess.
But that's the whole nature of the show. Behind the kitchen doors is a secret. Yeah. We don't know what goes on back there.
Yeah, well, a lot of things going on there. You know, but fortunately, the kitchen is a different space than the bar. And, you know, but I will say that your bars are about the same size as your kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. You can sit, 20, 30 people mm-hmm. at the bar?
Yeah. And it wraps around.
Yes.
We did that on purpose because we wanted people to meet each other across the bar. If they saw, you know, we wanted to be engaging and to not have the only location that has the wall is the orange location.
Yeah.
But most of the bars would kind of wrap around because we wanted people to engage with each other.
Tell us that story about the bottle in Birdcage.
The what?
Bottle. A whiskey bottle in a birdcage.
Okay. A bottle in a birdcage.
He wants to get deep real fast.
Okay, all right. Bottle in a birdcage. Now you lost me. Okay.
Well, because you haven't been by, so you don't see. So it's an element part of our design.
Drunken parrot or something.
And it is actually the symbolic of, I call it the windows of my soul. Because the first store that got developed was our orange location. Yeah. And when we were building that store, I was going through previously very tough time in my life.
I know. I don't know if you want to talk much about it.
Yeah, no, we can talk about it.
It's unbelievable. You have a big turn in your life.
Oh, yeah.
And let's go back to the cage.
Yeah,
you got to give us a little. You can't leave that just hanging out.
It's a very symbolic
very dramatic thing. We're like, but we'll talk about that later.
Short story long. I was just going through a really bad heartbreak, very depressed, very very suicidal. And I went through this for years, just wanting to just die. I just like, oh, I'm over this. Why am I here? What am I doing this for? I don't want to be here anymore. And I just was miserable. I would only leave my house to make donuts in the morning. There was a good 2 years of my life where I failed my team. I was only waking up to make donuts. I go back home, crawl into bed, cry myself to sleep. And I just wanted to die, but I knew I couldn't do that. Like, that's not an option as much as I wanted to do that. And after years of that, you don't want to feel that way. When you're depressed and suicidal, you don't, like, people are like, oh, just get out of
it. Snap out of it.
Just do this, do that. And it's like, you know, when you're in that deep, you don't want to do anything. And I didn't want to feel that way anymore. I was just like,
I could tell because you were always really happy to see people and greet people as friends and, you know, very enthusiastic, very positive after that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of, with work is different and then personal life's different, right? You kind of put on this face, mm-hmm. This front for everyone because you kind of have to. But then, you know, deep down inside, you're lonely, you're sad,
How do you run a business? I went through a period of deep depression once, and it's very hard to keep the business going.
It's hard. I mean, I have my partner.
Hole up.
Yeah, I have my partner to thank. I have the team to thank because they all, you know, they all kept doing what they did and picked up the slack. And, you know, but when we were building the store, I was like, okay, still, that's kind of where I was ingrained in the building process at that time, not really running day-to-day operations, which was great too because I got to express what I was feeling within the art of building the stores. So that's why there's a lot of undertones. People don't know a lot of the things that I was going through, but there's undertones of it in the store. You can't tell by looking at it. You're like, oh, that's really pretty. That's a really pretty whiskey room.
So this is why you put the bottle in the cage as assembly. You were the birds inside the cage.
I felt trapped. I was so trapped by my emotions and trapped by my feelings. I couldn't move. I was in a and it was years. It wasn't like I was sad for a month. It was years I was feeling like this. So trapped, so alone. And I just want to feel like that. So I'm like, I want to release all this. I don't want to feel this anymore. And I want to lock up what are my addictions, which is alcohol, alcohol and love. Yeah. And I locked that up in the cage. And I said, you know what? From now on, I don't want to feel this anymore. I'm not going to let this have power over me anymore, because it has powered over me for so long and controlled what I did. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be a prisoner anymore.
What a powerful image. And to put it out publicly.
Yeah, it's
like
amazing.
That.
And you won. You made it happen.
Thank you.
And now you control your life in a positive way. And look at what you achieved.
Oh.
And, you know, it's unbelievable. You know,
appreciate that.
So you...
It isn't that part of... not to dwell on this anymore, and we need to. But I had a bar for a number of years, Kelly McHugh's in Mission Viejo, and we loved serving, and we loved drinking, we loved all this stuff. But that can easily turn into an addiction. So many people in that business become alcoholics.
That's me. I was an alcoholic addict. I mean, I still, when you're an addict, you'll always be an addict.
Yes.
You're just addicted. You just got to gear your, you direct your addiction to the right path.
Yeah.
Because you can go either way, but you're going to have it no matter what. I still have it. I don't go shopping because if I buy one thing, I'm going to buy the whole store. I don't eat chips. If I eat salt and vinegar chips is my like Achilles heel. If I eat one, I'll eat the whole bag.
So do you not drink anymore?
I don't drink anymore, yeah.
So you run a bar and you don't drink?
Yeah, 11 years
actually,
sober.
Lucky me, Leslie, our partner, and I, mm-hmm. we went for dinner, mm-hmm. and to because she loved Thai food from some reason, because you like the spices, I guess, you know, like that. But she would not drink, so I don't drink alcohol. No, I was shocked because she owned bars and restaurants.
Very successful bars.
She
didn't
drink. And, you know, amazing turnaround. Congratulations.
No, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
Well, thank
that.
You for sharing that, too. Yeah. So what's the name Boss Cat mean? Why?
So Boss Cat was my nickname.
Oh, you were the Boss Cat.
I was the Boss Cat, yeah. So when I had the sports bar, my business partner, John, he's a really tall guy. I'm sure you guys all seen him around the restaurant. He's 6'11", big, tall.
Wow, that's big, tall. Yeah.
And everyone assumes that he's the owner, right? Like, but this is back, he is the owner. But back in when we had the bar, the sports bar, before he was my partner, mm-hmm. People were just assuming that he's an owner. And his friends would kind of tease him and be like, she's the boss.
She's the boss.
She's the real boss.
She's the real boss.
So they started calling me Boss Cat. And my partner would tell me, he's like, you know, my friends call you Boss Cat. I'm like, well, what's a Boss Cat? I would Google it and nothing would come up. Now, if you Google Boss Cat, there's like all sorts of things. There's Boss Cat eyelashes, Boss Cat this, Boss Cat that.
Yeah.
But back then I Googled it. There was nothing Boss Cat. I'm like, what? And so when I saw him the next time, I said, you know, can I ask you something? He's like, what? I said, what's a Boss Cat? Why do you call me Boss Cat? He's like, you're the Boss Cat. He's an English guy. He's like, you're the Boss Cat.
Yeah.
That's you. You are the boss. You're the Boss Cat.
Sort of like Top Dog or Boss
yeah,
Cat.
Yeah, exactly.
Big Dog.
Yeah, whatever. Exactly. It's the female version of Big Dog, I guess you could say. Yeah, so I imagine this like slick looking, you know.
I'm sure so, people... A lot of people don't even know when they go into your restaurants. At the most, as a server, do the servers have...
The servers, no, because that's part of their training.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's part of the story. It's part of the training.
Yeah.
But people, the guests don't know a lot, because a lot of times I'll bring it up, or they'll ask me, and I'm like, oh, that was my nickname.
But
it's
actually,
a cool nickname.
That's why I'm Miss Boss Cat on my social media.
Yeah. It's pretty good, because people actually don't forget the name.
It's a very cool name.
You say, because
thank
it's
you.
Unique.
Yeah. So when we were coming up with the restaurant names, or I should say bar, because we didn't know it was going to be a restaurant, we were coming up all sorts of names, and then I kind of jokingly was like, oh, we should call it Boss Cat. And then he my partner actually was down for it. He's like, you know what, that's kind of catchy, and there's very a story catchy. There's a story behind it, so let's
so,
do that.
So your partner and you are the owners.
Yes, we're the founders.
And how many employees you have total now?
Oh,
an idea.
Like
she's so big she doesn't even know. She doesn't even know anymore.
I know. It's like 400 something, maybe.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so you do have a good management team.
Yes. And we've made some of them owners. Yes. So John and I are founders, and then we've made six other people owners.
That's interesting. That's an interesting way to grow.
We've always said, you know, because, you know, him and I, we've come from nothing, and we were employees at one point, you know. And when I actually wanted to open up my first bar, I used to tell my boss when I was bartender, I said, one day I'm going to open up a bar. And she used to just tell me, laugh at me and tell me, no, you don't want to do this. Like, you don't want to be in this business. Like, I'm like, no, I think I want to do that. And she kind of always just pushed that down and kind of not like, you know, instead of being a mentor and like guiding me, she kind of dismissed me. Yeah. And I said, you know, I don't ever want to be that way.
I think they push you a little bit if you say, I will do it.
Motivation. Well, you know what? She actually ended up firing. They got a divorce. They ended up firing all the bartenders. I was one of the bartenders they fired. And that pushed me to open up my first bar. So, yes. Thank you, Viva.
Can I bring up another point? We had the great Steele Platt in here years ago talking about the art houses.
Oh, yes.
And
I know Steele.
He was a bartender and just like you. Just worked in a million places and then ran some places and finally built his own place. But to take it to that next level, Chef and I talked about this before, to run multiple places in multiple states, that is a whole nother breed of cat.
Yeah, I'm talking about that. Are you going to keep expanding?
So we would love to, and we were supposed to go into Arizona, but, you know, building costs has gone up so much. It's quadrupled. Mm-hmm. And we just, right now, we can't keep growing right now with how much everything's costing. Yeah. So,
but you got
we were trying to get creative and
you got a concept, and like eventually private equity came to Steele and took it over.
Yeah, that's the dream, right?
That's the thing is, even when you have a concept, you have to have a spin off of a concept now to bring something else, especially if you do an Orange County. I don't know, this is your idea, maybe. Maybe you can do a new bus cat concept. You know, that's what you plan
to do. A small
one
or a cafe, a mini or something.
Yeah.
But you have to, the concept used to be, you got a place and then you open two or three, and now people are telling me, I can't, it costs so many millions to open one place.
It's insane.
I can't make that back. My investors will only make money if I build 20 of them or 10 of them.
Right. Yeah, and that's even a gamble. That's even if you find someone to buy you, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like your concept is very, you own it, your concept on your own, because you want to have the...
We do.
That's why we call you Boss Cat. You know, you have to have a little bit of control.
Yeah, we do. So, we're self-funded, so we own all of it.
But if you have, it looks like you have a fantastic managers also.
We do.
Who want maybe to partner with you, and that will be probably...
Yeah, and that's why we made six people owners, because, you know, a lot of them were with us day one. Even JC, our... when you say accounting, because he does more than accounting, but he was with me since before I even met my partner. Yeah. So, you know.
Do you do ownership to some of your chef as well?
Our chef is a partner as well, yes.
Yes, I'm sure they really love that. But for two reasons, they love to be having ownership, but also for you, they're not going to leave tomorrow.
Yes.
I mean, you know, so they are attached to your business.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It will run the same if you're not there. That was the problem with my bar. When I wasn't there, it didn't run the same.
You know. Yes. Yeah. People have moods. But I'm saying, they have good days and bad days.
You talked about Pascals. As enormously successful as you were and famous, there weren't 5 Pascals. There weren't 10 Pascals because there was only one of you. And people wanted to see you.
I was actually in that business mode to train others. I was very exclusive. This is what I want, and I don't think any other can do that.
Exactly.
Because
that's not scalable.
My concept was very my identity.
Yeah.
But yours is more open because you have bars. I never had really bars and things. You're a great example of develop a concept. And if he walks once, walks twice, walks 4 times.
Which leads to my next question. Now, you got a concept, it hit, it's turned into multiple units. All the challenges, that is, maybe it goes nationwide, maybe it stays where it's at. Why go out on a limb and open yet another concept, this 10 Sushi and Cocktail Bar?
So 10 Sushi and Cocktail Bar used to be 10 Asian Bistro. Yeah. And it was next door to the original Boss Cat in Newport Beach. Mm. I don't know if you're familiar with that property.
MacArthur, huh?
Yes, I'm MacArthur. Yeah, that property was a unique property. It had 3 businesses on one. Yeah. It had a nightclub, a sushi restaurant, massive sushi restaurant, by the way. It was 5,000 square feet.
Wow, that's big.
And then Boss Cat, which was where the first Boss Cat was.
How big was the first Boss Cat?
3,000 square feet.
And I have to say, I've been to, when it was open, to the nightclub. It was... lying out of my door on the weekend. It was crazy. There's no place like this anymore.
No, I know, right? the first Boss Cat was 3,000 square feet with the little side patio I built halfway through.
Squeeze a little more in there.
Patio doesn't count, right?
For the rent.
Nobody knows.
Right.
Push out onto the sidewalk here.
So originally, when we went into that location, our ex-partner, Vinny, he had bought the nightclub. He had told us before we had even opened up Boss Cat, he said, we were going to originally go into a property in Irvine, and he called us and said, don't sign your lease. I just bought the nightclub. There's a space next door. You can put your concept there. And I was like, I don't know. That thing's been a million concepts. I don't know if I like that area. Let's just go look at it. I looked at it. I fell in love with the patio. I was like, back then I was like all about day drinking, patio, outdoor.
And you start owning the block.
And there aren't many bars where you can date, where you can go outside. Most of them are dark and inside.
Why? Yeah. Why is there not more outdoor bars here in beautiful Orange County? More rooftops. That's my goal.
Yes.
Anyways, so have 10...
Just on a quick note of use, I went to Huntington Beach, to Bolsa Chica State Park, and there are Heritage Brewing has... Heritage or Barbecue, rather, and Sea Salt, the other place.
Yes.
And they are basically just big open-air bars on the beach.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen that
Alicia
anywhere.
Yeah, Alicia is doing a great job over there. Okay. 10 was already there. So that was already running. And, once we got into Boss Cat and got Boss Cat going, our partner Vinny was like, you know what? I don't run restaurants. Can you guys help me? So then we started helping him with 10. And then eventually he's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Because he has a day job. He's into big boy job. He don't want to be fooling around with the nightclub anymore. He's like, I'm done with all this. How about you guys buy me out and you take over? So we ended up kind of gradually, 10 kind of just naturally became part of us. We picked it up. Yeah. And when we moved to the new location at Lakeshore, I told my partner, I said, I have an idea of how I want 10 to look. just let me.
It's a beautiful let me, design.
Thank you. Oh, I said, let me do it. Shit. Let me get this idea out of my head because I'm an addict. So when you get an idea in your head, yeah. it goes over and over like a record haunting you until you do it, right? So I'm like, I need to get this out of my head.
You know, Paul, you always ask me, say, where is the fine dining?
Yes, in Orange County? Absolutely.
You, if you go to that place in Irvine, you know, the new place, it is really a combination of California flair and fine dining.
And fine dining, yeah.
With a great bar. And this is the modern way of fine dining.
I think so.
I think it's typical of California.
Because you even said when you did Pascal's, it was it's the kitchen. They're coming for you. And yeah. and you're cooking, and you go out, and all the famous chefs you talk about, Michel Richard, and, yeah. and all these others, I come to meet the chef to taste their food. He comes out and talks to the audience. It wasn't about drinking. The bar was kind of an ancillary thing.
But now it's a step above, and so you go out, and it's like an event.
It's an event, right.
And you have good music, good drinks.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah, have you ever heard that that quote? Get a girl that can do both.
Okay.
Get you
we
one
won't
that
go
can
too
do,
deep into that.
Get
quote,
you but. One that can do both. This is it. You can either come casual or you can come dressed up on a date night. Yeah. Like, you can do both.
And everybody feel comfortable.
And that was the main the main point of everything. We wanted everyone to feel comfortable.
And it is also in a business area. So you have outside business travelers. They come and dine, mixed with the locals. It's really a mix.
That was the problem with my bar. Yeah, it was there for 10 years, but Kelly McHugh's. But it was just a bar, and it had no day business because it was in a suburban area.
Yeah,
so
yeah, those are hard. We had a couple of concepts like that in Texas, and we had to sell it because it was hard during the weekday. It's it's a ghost town.
It's a ghost town.
On the weekends, fine, but you can't. Restaurants not sustainable on 3 days a week business.
No. Yeah, I don't know.
Can I ask you about the nightclub? You don't own the nightclub.
No, we're actually fully out of that property. That property is actually fenced off. It's going to be turned into condos.
Yeah, it's been turned.
We moved. Down, yeah. We are where. Do you know where the Il Fornaio is?
Sort of, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's like iconic restaurant. It's been there for eons.
It's right across.
We're right on Von Carmen and Quartz.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We were the Lifetime Fitness.
Yeah, a big gym fitness.
Exactly. Lifetime Fitness, Il Fornaio. Yeah. It's been there for like 30 years.
If you look on Il Fornaio,
it's south of the airport.
If you look, if you go to Il Fornaio, you look ahead. You have to turn your head.
Why have I not gone there? This is the perfect place for me. I got to go.
You should come.
And the parking is right next door. Easy access.
So I got to ask you about whiskey because you're one of these. There's a new trend. When I had a bar, this was in the 90s, everybody was just trying to get microbrew beers. That was the new trend. The Yard House started then. We started then. It was trying to get people to drink other than Bud and Coors, which is what 50% of bars sold in those days. And then things like whiskeys, maybe tequila was starting to happen, vodka a little bit, but whiskey was just a forgotten category. Gin and whiskey, we couldn't give that stuff away. And all of a sudden, in the last 10 years.
There was a time became more like martinis. Everybody wanted to have martini.
Everyone wanted a vodka-based drink, and every guy wanted maybe bourbon. But
now the culture on whiskey, I go back to the wine culture. Whiskey, bourbon is clearly a new thing. People have knowledge of it.
And around the world, one of the biggest whiskey consumers in the world is Japan.
I read recently it's India.
India, too. I think I read that same thing, too. Yeah. India, Japan, places you wouldn't picture at all having whiskey cultures here. Yeah. All right. So why whiskey?
So this is the story behind whiskey, because I was that girl that only drank vodka drinks.
Yeah.
I was...
Because you can mix it with everything. And
I wasn't drinking for taste, let's just say. Exactly. I was drinking for effect.
A tasty cold.
I was drinking for effect.
Clear drink.
Right. And vodka will give you that effect. You can put it in anything.
Yeah,
and,
you can't taste it, right? But I got invited by one of the vendors, alcohol vendors from Bullet. He's like, come to this Bullet event.
A big bourbon out of...
Yes.
Kentucky.
And I was like, okay, cool. So I go, I always go to all the free events because I'm like, free booze, I'm there. So I go to the event and I go to the bar and I say, oh, can I get a vodka Red Bull?
Vodka Red Bull. No, that's going to give you a punch.
I know.
I remember. Yeah.
That, wow.
This is how long ago.
That's why you have wrong nights.
Right. So I'm like, oh, can I get a vodka Red Bull? And then he looks at me, Adam Forrest. He looks at me. He's like, no, you're not drinking vodka Red Bull at my Whiskey Bullet event.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You are drinking this. And he hands me this menu and there's like five bullet cocktails. I said, oh, fine. I hate whiskey. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
But I'll do it. So I started at the top, and it was like this apple bullet. I drank it. I was like, ooh, this is good. And then drank the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. And then at the end, I was like, I love whiskey.
Yeah.
This is the best. And I kind of...
whiskey has a complex flavor to it. No, vodka, yeah, I don't think
yes.
does.
Yeah.
Once again, I go back to wine. You
very
know,
much.
You when doing the fermentation, you can flavor, and you can, you know, give the woody taste or the smoky taste from,
yeah.
Well, it
but these cocktails, eat, they all had different flavor. They were just delicious, and not, you know, by the end, of course, after five cocktails, you're like, I love everything, right? But after that event, I kind of started, you know, as an addict, started diving into what whiskey really was, and then I started finding all these different stories and then bottles and then all these different brands. And
American whiskey,
started,
Scotch whiskey, Irish whiskey, all
yeah,
these different.
Yeah, I started discovering a whole world. And I was like, oh, my God, there's way more to the world than just vodka.
Yeah.
No, you're talking about being an addict. So very quickly, you know, you out of that.
Yeah.
Can you give a tip for people who are addict but still appreciate a nice little drink and want to have a normal life and without
it's
cutting
hard.
Off completely.
That's a really hard thing. You have to really have strong self-control.
Yeah.
So I always say I have strong willpower, but I have absolute no self-control.
Yeah.
None. Because I know... I wish I could have just one or two glasses of wine with dinner or just be able to sip and just like enjoy. But I can't. I'm like 0 to 100. It's like all or nothing. And
one is too many and 100 isn't enough.
Right. So it's hard. You know, you have to really be self-aware and really know how to control. But if you know you're an addict, you shouldn't drink.
I agree. If you really are an addict, you can't moderate.
Because you don't know how, right? And it's not a bad thing. And I try to not educate because I'm not a teacher, but I try to tell people being an addict is not a bad thing. You just have to learn how to be addicted to the right things and not do
that's
alcohol and drugs.
Right.
Like, it's a great trait. I call it a trait instead of a disease because it just makes me feel like, oh, you have, you know, cancer or something. Even though they technically say it's a disease.
You were depressed at that time, too.
Yes. You know what? Because I used to use drugs, too.
Yeah.
And I always thought, oh, I'm using drugs to run away from my problems. Maybe I was depressed my whole life and I didn't know it.
Yeah.
I didn't know, but... Now being sober and looking back, I was doing that to feel something because I was so numb.
Yeah.
I was so numb to everything.
How long have you been sober now?
11 years.
Congratulations.
Thank
Congratulations.
You.
Well, I admire somebody who can recognize this and deal with it. And then you're still around it, though. That's got to be a temptation you would think that would not work.
Yeah, you know, and then when you go into, my partner did an outpatient rehab, and she was like, you guys own a bar? No, you need to sell your business.
Yeah.
You need to get all the alcohol out of your house. And you need to go. And we're like,
no,
we're not going to change our lives like that. We're going to, you know what, we're going to do the opposite and just engulge ourselves in it, but just don't. It's like the ultimate test, right? You have to. But we had to because we had no choice. This is the only business that we both kind of knew.
Do you share that with your staff and bartenders? And because some bartenders maybe addict too, because they like to taste.
I think a number are.
Oh, there's a lot of addiction that runs rampant through our hospitality industry. We used to talk about it more during like our pre-shifts. Like we used to have a big pre-shift every Sunday. My partner would talk. We're very candid and very open about our, you know, our stories. But we don't preach sobriety on anyone. I don't wish sobriety upon anyone. But yeah, I have had a lot of staff members that would come up and they know our story and they said, you know, I actually became sober because of you, or you're an inspiration to stop drinking and to show me that I can still drink and I can still be around alcohol and not have to drink.
And can I give you one other perspective? So I had a bar where we were trying to sell upscale beers and wines and tequilas and stuff here. And yet I've never been a big drinker, and I've been around people, many members of my family are alkoholics, and so I'm very anti kind of alcohol. And they're like, well, how can you be around a bar? Isn't this running against your creed here? I said, we're teaching people to drink better so they drink less. Yeah. It's expensive. It's filling. It isn't just taking shots and cheap stuff and cheap beer and cheap booze. If you can learn to moderate your drinking, if I'm only going to have one or two drinks, then I can afford something better and I'll taste it more. Where you said you didn't feel anything. You probably didn't taste anything either. It was just food.
Oh, being numb. I mean, when I said I was numb, I was just numb to life.
Well, yeah. So you weren't enjoying.
I wasn't. No, I wasn't.
What you were, the food you're tasting.
So, Paul, going back to, I would say back in behind the kitchen door.
Yes, right.
You know, so, because a lot of employees and staff members in the kitchen also have some addictions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and this is why they don't show up, they come late, something like that.
Or drinking on the job.
They drink on the job. They go under the table, they drink. And
Or in the lockers. I've gone and seen the locker. I'm like, there's a bottle.
Yeah, I know. Where's my brandy? You know, because they don't drink good stuff. They drink whatever they can grab, you know.
It's late night, it's party, it's having a good time.
And even not during the job.
Yeah.
And then so they say, they take a 10-minute break, and where are they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to hide shots in the bathroom. Customers would buy me shots and be like, hide it in the bathroom.
So don't bring Grand Marnier in the kitchen, because you will buy it more than you need, you know?
Right.
So, but the fact, if they look at your experience that you share, and you really open to share, I think a lot of them will understand that, you know, from, because they suffer.
Yes. They're suffering in silence, too.
It's silence.
And they don't see a way out other than just leaving the whole industry.
And then the staff around them suffer as well.
Yeah.
And so there's no really good relationship. Yeah. But once they flip back to being sober, look at that, the success you can get.
Yeah.
You know?
And you can still be in the industry and be sober. That's the message here.
And we have a different culture, too, because, like, we're not the owners that are drinking with our staff, right? We have actually a total no drinking allowed on property, just because in the beginning we were like, okay, we'll do shift drinks, and we did that. But then, like, people get in fights, or they would, you know, have a little too much, and you're liable as an owner. You're liable if they leave your property and they're driving. You're liable. So we just said, you know what? No drinking. There's no drinking allowed.
I'm with you, and I think that's been too long part of the culture of bars and restaurants.
Sushi chef with sake around and the sushi chef
One for me.
It used to be so normal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it still is, but it's alcohol and addiction runs rampant in the hospitality industry. I think it's because, one, creatives, right? Are more, have tendencies for addiction because we're creative.
And you're going to try something, explore something, you're going to do something. Maybe if you think it makes you happier, funnier, more creative, or whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just that environment. It's that party environment that we're in, right?
And it's late night and it's long hours and all that.
And they're like, you know, some of them are hooking up. And
Someday we'll do a show on that. Here,
right? There's a few things I want to approach, you know. This week, you're going to be part of the test of Irvine. Can you tell us more?
Oh, yeah, right. Let's
we're not
that.
Only going to be part. We are hosting it.
So what? Hosting?
Yeah. Whoa, so you're talking about how restaurants, you know, expanding different avenues and different things.
Right.
This is one of the avenues that I've been exploring is our production side of things. You know, we also do a lot of music festivals, like bartending at staffing all the bars for that, and then we're doing this big Taste of Irvine event tomorrow, hopefully to see you.
Where, how? Yeah,
it's at the park at Lakeshore, so it's right in front of Bosscat, so you can be able to see Bosscat if you come. And there'll be 500 people there and a bunch of restaurants from Irvine, and
this is
lots
on a Thursday.
Said
tomorrow
from 5 to 8.
So for those listening later, we're doing this
Thursday.
In August.
Yeah,
this
August.
Is August the 14th.
Bar? Should we go there?
I'd like to.
You should.
I'd like to. August 4th. What are the hours? How do they get
tickets?
5 to 8.
And tickets are available on Eventbrite. There's a link in my bio. You can go on Instagram.
And what do I see if
Irvine.
I go there? Multiple restaurants, multiple bars? What?
Yeah, lots of restaurants. We have Bosscat 10, Il Fornaio will be there, Urban Ranch, where Chef Jonah will be there, Goldfinch, Warehouse 72, Postino, Puesto.
Wow, a pretty cool lineup of stuff here, yeah.
Yeah.
On El Fornaio, of course.
Yes, of course. Yeah, El Fornaio will be there. Pandora will be there as well. Lifetime Fitness. Lots of booze, too. We have Happy Dad. We also have Bullet will
What's
be there.
Happy Forged Dad's? In. Happy Dad's is everywhere now. Where did Happy Dad? We got to get them on the show.
We can totally get them on the show. We can get Allie Taylor here.
Everywhere I go, I see Happy Dad's seltzers.
Yes.
Everywhere.
They are blowing up. Have you seen that Happy Mom, too? I thought that was cute.
No.
We need a Happy Sober Mom.
Yeah.
They're a seltzer, they're...
That's a whole nother category. Where did seltzers come from, and why are they so hot? My wife loves seltzers.
Because I think they're light and refreshing and easy to drink, and you can drink a lot of it and not get too wasted.
A little
wasted.
Lower in alcohol, whether we're 4 or 5% or something.
Are they seltzer with alcohol?
Yeah. Alcoholic seltzers are the hot category.
Yeah. It beat, when White Claw came out, it beat, I think, beer out of the water. Like,
it just went crazy. You go to every bar and restaurant now, they have a separate category, beer, wine, booze, and seltzers. If you go to microbreweries, they're now offering seltzers.
Yeah, and they make their own. Yeah.
Make their own,
So it's totally different than Mocktail. Mocktail is gone, no?
No, Mocktails?
Mocktails
is a huge... There's bars now that's just Mocktails.
Exactly. Non-alcoholic
cocktails. Bars. We actually... Chris, when we redid our menu, he specifically made a Mocktail menu. And, and they're priced like the same as a cocktail.
Yeah,
but they're also made... They're also handcrafted very well.
Complex flavors.
Right. Yeah. So it's not just like having a lemonade, right? Mm-hmm. But mocktails is a huge thing.
So I think mocktails are here to stay.
So mocktails could be a good alternative if you want to go away from alcoholic cocktail.
Yeah. I do every once in a while, but I don't like because of calories. I'd rather eat my calories.
Yeah. But there is a sizable portion. I saw it at my bar 10 years ago, or started. People who want to come out who aren't going to drink. And you don't want that to be the reason they don't come to your bar or restaurant. So there are a growing number of people. In fact, I just read a study today, this morning, that said alcohol consumption is at its 30-year low.
Yes.
Particularly younger people, who are usually the bigger drinkers, and then you slow down as you get older and get jobs and families and whatever. They're drinking less and less. So all of these alternatives, lower alcohol consumption, seltzers, non-alcoholic mocktails, are critical if you want. You don't want a no vote. 10 people are saying, let's go out to there. Oh, no, all they got is that. I'm not going.
Yeah.
You got to have something for the crowd that's not going to drink.
So, my friend Leslie, what are you going to serve at the test of wine?
Ah, yeah. What are we going to taste?
Oh, so 10 Sushi's doing a Wagyu hand roll. Which chef cuts fresh from like this tomahawk. It's really delicious. And then Bosscat's going to be doing a pulled short rib tostada with barbecue.
Okay.
And the mini donuts will be there.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We'll have assorted mini donuts.
And there's a whole another episode. When did Wagyu, I never even heard of Wagyu until a couple years ago, this certain type of what, Japanese beef or something?
Yeah. Well, Japanese, but they start to raise Wagyu beef in the U.S.
Yes. Yes. But
and
that is...
with more affordable. And it took a couple of generations of beef to have really the real closest Wagyu to Japan.
My 11-year-old grandson loves burgers, loves steak, loves tacos.
Still,
he only wants Wagyu.
Oh, he's fancy.
Yeah. Still American Wagyu is fine, but the Japanese Wagyu is
The A5.
But also, you have to pay the price. Extreme grade, you know?
Yeah. So. And you got to be careful because some restaurants kind of pass off Wagyu and then it's not Wagyu.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's got to have that name on it for him to eat it. It's got to say Wagyu Burgers or something. All right. How do they reach you? We're out of time.
Yes.
Social media. I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Miss Boss Cat, Facebook.
Miss Boss Cat. Okay. Yeah. That's how they look you up. And the places and the restaurants, give them us again here. Boss Cat Kitchen and Libations and 10 Sushi and Cocktail Bar. They're where?
We have Irvine, Orange, Houston, Dallas.
Soon to be across the country.
Yes.
So if you go on the website, there's a BossCat location.
Yes.
There's a whole page on that.
And the Miss Mini Donuts are still happening, but they're out of the back door here?
Yes, in Irvine. So people and order online.
You go to Farmer's Market as well.
Yes, I used to. I haven't lately because I've been busy with the baby.
Yeah.
But I was at the 6 months.
There you go. Boy or girl?
Boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is he going to be the boss cat?
Not yet.
He's the boss of me. But people can order the donuts online on our website, missminidonuts.com, and then we can deliver to them or pick up at Boscat.
And you know, I'm sure you will love if our audience listeners to say, "Oh, we heard about you on the podcast."
Yes, I do. I love that. I do love that.
We'd make it special and.
You looking for a discount? Is that what you want here?
No, I'm looking for a nice little donut. You know?
I love donuts. What a cool combination of businesses from an unlikely place.
Oh,
and I thank you for being so honest and open about your life and your background and your still love and passion for the business.
Thank you.
And how you're just making it happen. You are the modern restaurateur.
You know what?
Trying to survive.
You... were managing to be your own boss and you boss on your own life.
Yeah,
right.
That's why, you know,
there you go.
Take your life in control and be successful.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Chef.
Well, there you have it. There are some real life examples of why you should tune in every week. We have fun. We talk about the reality as well. What's happening behind the kitchen doors? And where is it all going? Maybe it's a whole bunch of crazy concepts from Boss Cat Kitchens to sushi and donuts. Figure that all out. Whole new world. hear all about it each and every week right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.